It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins. We normally have both Wes Collins and Cecil, but today we have Cecil, of course, of the eponymously named Harvell & Collins law firm. And by the way, the website is harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And don't hesitate to give them a call. Justified by numerous conversations we've had recently, that number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. And with that, Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood, and that was quite an introduction, and thank you for that. Mr. West is in court today, which is many times the case. Courts are now, Superior Court and Federal Court are now full steam ahead here in the new 2026 year, and of course after the snow days of last week. So there's a lot of catch up going on in our administrative courts, and Wes, of course, as one would expect, is in the center of that.
Right.
Lockwood, I don't recall us ever discussing what I might refer to as the most misunderstood document, one of the most misunderstood documents in the law, and that is the prenuptial agreement, sometimes referred to as the antenuptial agreement, sometimes just referred to as a marital contract. It doesn't really matter what we call it, according to the law. The question is, what do the terms of this document say?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the minute you mention the word prenuptial agreement, in comes in waltz is our Hollywood friends,
right,
and all that we hear on television and read and wherever we read it about all of the prenuptial agreements that exist in the Hollywood world. That is really what creates the confusion. And so here we go, Lockwood. A prenuptial agreement is a contract between two people, two persons.
Mm-hmm.
Where they basically state that before they get married, they are going to be in control of the outcome of their assets, that they are not going to allow the government, if you will, the state of North Carolina, to dictate to them as a married couple what they can and cannot do relative to their assets. They are going to maintain control over their assets. Now, if they get married and then they choose to leave everything that they own to each other, guess what? They're in control.
Mm-hmm.
They therefore can do that. If they get married and they determine to appoint their eldest son as the executor of their estate, as their financial power of attorney, as their health care agent, then yes, they can do that because they are in control. But if they do not have the prenuptial agreement, if they do not have this contract that maintains, Lockwood, their control, then the state of North Carolina comes in and dictates what the circumstances might be. In other words, who is the executor of the estate?
Mm-hmm.
Who is the agent under the power of attorney? What percentage of the estate passes to the surviving husband or wife if there were a death to the exclusion of the children? What is the distribution of the assets? Even though the two parties may have decided that they would like for their assets to be distributed in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
the state of North Carolina is going to dictate whether or not they can do that or not. And so, Lockwood, as you begin to see right out of the gate here, there's such a misunderstanding. So many people think a prenuptial agreement is all about a divorce.
Right.
And all about alimony and property settlement.
Yeah.
And there are provisions in the agreement that provide for what happens if the parties were to have a divorce. There are provisions with regard to that. But there is so much more in the agreement. And to me, the most imperative part of the agreement, the most important parts of a prenuptial agreement, are all of the provisions concerning who is in control of our estate, who is in control if we are incompetent, how can our assets pass to the next generation, all of those kinds of issues. I also will be very quick to add, Lockwood, that it's a contract. Mm-hmm. And a contract is not some boilerplate something that we just pull off the internet. If the provisions for the divorce don't apply in the upcoming marriage, then those particular provisions, which are probably two or three pages of most prenuptial agreements, could be not included. Mm-hmm. A prenuptial agreement is a contract. The contract might not even mention what happens if there were a divorce or a dissolution of marriage. The contract might only discuss, might only govern, if you will, the issues relative to the estate side. There are absolutely two Roman numerals, if you will, relative to a prenuptial agreement as to the issues that it addresses. And Roman numeral one is the estate side, as I've said now a couple of times. Who's the executor? Who's the power of attorney? Who's the guardian? How would the assets get distributed? The other second section is what happens if there's a dissolution of the marriage. Uh-huh. You know, what happens if there's a separation or divorce? Now, in most of these circumstances, we are seeing these agreements done in second and third marriages,
right,
where
right.
folks already have children from a prior marriage. Mm-hmm. And want to be able to make sure that they can pass their assets as they so choose to the next generation and not be burdened by provisions in the law adopted by our North Carolina legislature that dictate certain percentages, notwithstanding the desire of the client, of the parties, that dictate certain percentages mm-hmm. to the surviving spouse. And dictate certain preferences as to who would be the fiduciary. The way that I explained it, and I did it just yesterday with a wonderful gentleman from Beaufort, he's probably, I don't know, 65, maybe even 70 years old. And he has found a partner, a wonderful lady that he wants to have now a profound relationship with, and he does want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
But what I explained to this wonderful gentleman from Beaufort is that this is a great thing. This maintains your control. You now are in control, Mr. Mm-hmm. Jones, mm-hmm. of what your assets. And by the way, when you go home and talk to the to-be Mrs. Jones, you can tell her that it's reciprocal.
Right.
She also is in control of her assets. No one is going to be able to come along here after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 7 years of marriage and dictate to you or dictate to your prospective wife what your estate will look like, how it will be distributed, what assets go here, what assets go there, who the executor might be. You are in control of all of those issues. Because you, Mr. Jones, have been very wise by seeking out legal advice and entering into a premarital agreement with your wife-to-be that would govern these kinds of issues. And so, Lockwood, I just think the word prenuptial mm-hmm. just frightens people. It is confusing. It bodes, you know, Hollywood and celebrity.
Right.
People think, I don't need that in good old Eastern North Carolina.
Right.
That's for all those famous people. And yet the consequences of not having such a contract are just so very significant down the road when you come in to see your lawyer say, well, I did get remarried. My wife and I are in a second marriage or a third marriage. We have children from prior marriage. But we sat down at the kitchen table before we got married, and we agreed on everything.
Right.
Well, guess what? You agreed on everything, but you didn't agree in writing and have such a writing recorded. And so your verbal agreements with regard to your estate planning, your appointments of your fiduciaries are not going to be binding.
I'm going to use a term, I may not be the accurate description, the marital distribution that the state determines. In other words, in the case of the death of a spouse, the state determines, if I'm not mistaken, if there's no specific distribution plan in the estate, the state steps in and determines what percentage of the estate will fall to the surviving spouse based on the years of marriage. Am I correct on that description? And I'm remembering something that we've talked about in the past.
That's absolutely correct, Lockwood. And technically, that's called the elective share.
Elective share.
And the elective share. And that exists in the law as promulgated by the North Carolina North Carolina legislature. It is the law in the state of North Carolina. And that percentage is going to apply whether you like it or not,
right,
because you are not in control, because you did not enter into a prenuptial agreement. If you had a marital agreement that waives the elective share, and if that is waived, free will while being competent, good representation by a lawyer before you get married, then that statute is not going to apply. But otherwise, it's Katie bar the door. And people just do not understand this. They also do not understand that the statutes of North Carolina dictate who is the first choice to be an executor, to be a guardian if we were to become frail, to be our power of attorney. And the first choice, as one, it's not surprising, would be the spouse.
Right.
But sometimes in the second and third marriages, Lockwood, the wonderful lady in the marriage, the wonderful man in the marriage, they don't want each other to have to be burdened with being their executor or being in charge of their finances. They have a wonderful child. Their child now is 50 or 60 years old in himself. You know, maybe their child is, you know, an accountant or a lawyer or a professional, and they desire that their firstborn daughter be the executor or their firstborn son. And they do not want to necessarily burden their spouse with those kind of obligations. And so here we go now, setting up a situation where the firstborn son or daughter has got to consult with a lawyer about their stepmother or their stepfather. And, of course, here we go, that can be controversial. A prenuptial agreement, a marital agreement, a contract can avoid all of these issues. And I'm very quick to say, Lockwood, the law is just fascinating. We're talking about a contract here.
Right.
We can call it a contract. We don't have to use that Hollywood word if our client doesn't want to. We just simply will call it a contract between prospective husband and prospective wife, and then set forward in a contract the provisions that these folks desire to control and continue to control, notwithstanding the North Carolina law. Very simple. Does not have to be terribly complicated in terms of the provisions that are in the contract, and it does not always bode for the issues of dissolution.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking you've got situations where an individual has family memorabilia, and it could be caught up in an estate matter when the individual who, this is assuming a second or third marriage, would like the family heirlooms and material to go to their direct issue, their children, but it gets caught up in the estate matters as well. I can imagine that that is I hadn't even considered the whole concept of a contract, but yes, I especially in light of the elective shares, but also just the estate distribution of material and assets.
Right. I love explaining it to our listeners in terms of maintaining control. Because the document would say the following. It would say that we're going to decide all of these issues about distribution, disposition of our estate, fiduciary appointments, executor power of attorney, etc. But then there's a provision that says that notwithstanding all of this, we may make a last will and testament, power of attorney, health care proxy, etc., that names our spouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're entitled to do that. This doesn't exclude the spouse. This just simply sets the mechanism, sets the playboard in a way, if you will, Lockwood, whereby the two folks make an informed decision. They decide who they want to be their executor. They decide the disposition of the family heirlooms without a lawyer, bless our hearts, having to tell the client, much to their surprise, well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones, you're not able to leave your home exclusively to your three children. You've been married to Mr. Jones for 10 years, and he now has a 50% interest in your home. And so we're going to need to now work around that as best we can, Mrs. Jones. And, of course, the client just sits there in utter disbelief.
I know.
And then says, well, how in the world can the law dictate to me what I can and cannot do with my assets? And the answer is, well, the law can, and the law does. And the only way around that is a informed agreement.
Right.
And with those kinds of details within it. So any listeners who have loved ones, mothers, fathers, grandparents, who are seeking to have another profound relationship known as marriage and are getting married, it is critical that they speak with a good lawyer in this area. Now, prenuptials and contracts of marriage are usually done by lawyers that are also estate lawyers.
Okay.
So most estate planning lawyers who do wills and trusts and these documents also are proficient in doing prenuptial agreements or marital contracts, just so our listeners hear that, Lockwood.
You know, one of the other aspects of this, and I've got another question I want to go here in a few moments with you, Cecil. We've got Cecil Harvell with us this afternoon of Harvell and Collins, and we're talking the dreaded prenuptial agreement, which he is describing it really as a contract. And we're going to talk about that in a moment. And I want to remind you, don't hesitate to make a phone call. Simple phone call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or online at harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, you know, one of the things related to this concept of a contract is it strikes me that I'm speaking as an observer here, it seems to protect the two principals from any possible conflict with extended family, their children and grandchildren and brothers and other family members, because through this contract, it sort of puts a barrier and gives them comfort from not having to worry about, well, I have a child that may prove to be adversarial in case there's, and eventually we do all pass on. So it strikes me that this is a contract that in reality is a protective structure for the for that relationship. Am I thinking correctly?
Absolutely, Lockwood. This document just lays everything out just as clear as a bell, and as such, makes all of the parties understand and comprehend exactly what is you know, going to happen. And it is legally binding. And the wife and the husband, even as they continue to be as they age, even if they aren't able to communicate as well as they could when they were a bit younger, this document is there to speak for them, to say basically, this is the decision that I made. I reduced it to writing, and everyone who is involved is to honor it.
Okay. Then the next question goes to a situation where, oh, we got married 2 years ago. We did not go to the process of a prenuptial agreement. Is there a way to set up that contract? Does it matter that it be in advance of the marriage?
Well, there is a postnuptial agreement.
Okay.
A marital agreement that is prepared after one is married. And so, yes, as a final stopgap, a good lawyer can dance around the issue that there wasn't a prenuptial and prepare a during marriage agreement or postnuptial agreement. Wow. Those are not preferred because, let's face it, the ball has already been thrown and we're at first base. So we would prefer to get them done ahead of time. But Lockwood, there are circumstances where there's comprehensive representation by both parties and consideration given. See, in a prenuptial or premarital agreement, the consideration is the marriage.
Right.
That in consideration of us signing this agreement, we now are agreeing with each other that we will get married. A postnuptial agreement doesn't have that consideration because we've already gotten married. So we're going to have to find something else to be appropriate consideration to bind the agreement.
Oh.
Okay, Lockwood, thank you so much for this, and I enjoyed being with you this afternoon. I'm going to post this on the website, harvellandcollins.com, as well as our Facebook page and our Instagram page and all those kinds of great things. And that's a good thing. So that people can re-listen to this this broadcast.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you. And, of course, Cecil Harvell with Harvell and Collins here on Let's Talk Legal. Cecil, look forward to talking to you again in the near term, next week.
Thank you, Lockwood. I enjoyed our talk today.